We just had an awesome interview with Scott Johnson, the founder and president of Digital Shovel. Paul, what did you think of the conversation?
Well, we haven't really had a chance to dive into mining a whole lot. You know, it's not our forte, and we just haven't had a guest on who that's what they do. So having Scott on and being able to dig into, you know, how you get into mining, what equipment you need, and at what stage you level up to what Digital Shovel's built here with these really compact data centers was just fascinating for me. It was a lot of learning, and I think if you're interested in mining, you'll love this episode.
Yeah, great conversation with Scott. He even tackles that question of what about the environmental concerns that some people have with mining when it comes to Bitcoin. And then at the end of the episode, watch till the end because we're gonna have a tour of the actual pod. You're gonna enjoy this one.
Show me the crypto. Show me the crypto. Show me the crypto.
In a world on the brink of disruption, two men will bring you clarity by interviewing some of the most intelligent and influential names in the blockchain world. Welcome to Show Me the Crypto with your hosts, Wade Patterson and Ulf Lonnegren.
Everyone, welcome to a special episode of Show Me the Crypto, live on location at the Blockchain Futurist Conference. We're here with Scott Johnson, who's the president and founder of Digital Shovel. Scott, welcome to Show Me the Crypto.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Yeah, excited to have you. And let's start out with the fact that this event's happening in Toronto. You're from Toronto. What's your thought on the Toronto crypto scene and maybe the crypto scene in Canada?
I mean, Toronto's always had a really, really strong crypto scene. I mean, it's blockchain as a whole. I mean, with, you know, Vitalik being from here, Ethereum more or less being founded here in Ontario. I mean, it's always had a very, you know, deep-rooted stance here, and the Futures Conference has been part of it, which is why we chose to be part of the show this year.
Nice. So, and have you been to the conference before? I mean, we, and speaking of, you know, people from the scene, we just had Anthony DiOrio on the stage. He's talking about the backstory of Ethereum and how it all started here. So it's great as fellow Canadians to be at a conference that both represents Canada and the blockchain scene. But have you been here before? What brought you here this year?
Yeah, I've been coming to the show pretty much since its inception. I mean, I've known Tracy for a long time. This is our first year actually exhibiting. They wanted us to bring down one of our data centers and have it on display. They reached out to our team and we made it happen. Historically, like I was talking about before the interview here, we generally do more mining-centric shows, but given that this is Toronto, we have the opportunity to set this up. We took full advantage of it.
We're going to talk about what's behind us in a second, but first, I'm curious to get into your own crypto background. I mean, at what point did you discover cryptocurrency and what was your initial impression?
That's a funny story. So before I got into the space, I actually thought the whole thing was a scam. I thought mining was hacking into somebody's wallets to try to steal their keys, and I thought that's all mining was.
What it sounds like when we're mining and
And I had a reasonably strong tech background, but I was still pretty naive at the time. I was at a dinner. Entrepreneur's dinner for something else, and I'm very vocal about my opinion. So when Bitcoin came up, I shared my opinion, and there was a couple of very knowledgeable guys at the table that night. One was Amir from Block Geeks, and I can't remember who the other guy was. And let me tell you, they very much proved me wrong that night. And I always say the best thing I can do is be wrong if I'm going to learn something, and I very much learned something that night. I went home the next week, bought a couple graphics cards. I think I started mining Zcash and Monero.
This is like privacy coins.
2015, 2016. Then got into Ethereum, and through the run up in 2017, you know, converted half my house into Ethereum miners and then an industrial unit. And we built our first container in 2018, end of 2017. And then that's how Digital Shovel started.
Wow. And I mean, like, we are going to get into this more, but just going back to your backstory and getting into mining, I mean, like, it's crazy when you see what you're building today. Did you have a like job history in, you know, building things of this magnitude in any way, or was this something you all learned after you got into mining and crypto?
Job history, no. I mean, I was fortunate. I grew up with both my father and my grandfather in the country, and basically at a family marina and you just built things yourself and you figured out a way to do it. And they taught me that from a young age. I don't really see anything as something you can't do, that you always need to rely on somebody else. And having that upbringing, when I got into the business, I knew nothing about electrical, nothing about metal forming. And it was all kind of, learning by fire, and it worked out. There's been mistakes through the process, but we're still here. And one of the beautiful things about it is like we're very hands-on I'm very hands-on with the process, but also with our customers. Like our first customer who bought our first container day one, Mining Store, shout out, just literally bought more containers from us last week. And,
wow.
we have customers that have stayed with us since day one, which is awesome.
So let's talk about Digital Shovel and the product that's behind us. So what is Digital Shovel? And what are we looking at behind us here?
Yeah, so Digital Shovel does everything but the servers. So we do the data center, the ventilation, the power distribution, smart automation of your miners, and power control systems, but we don't actually do the servers. So we're kind of miner agnostic, whether you want to be Bitmain, what's miner, you want to put some servers in there that are altcoins. What you've got behind us here is one of our largest data centers. So this is 4.8 megawatts. That can hold 1,408 S19s, which is, it's a silly amount of power.
Yeah.
Just the ventilation system alone is 70 kilowatts, which is, it's crazy when you think of how much electricity that is. But we also build smaller modular units. So the one that was down at the far end, our nanopod, that's something we develop for home miners that want to go from the one or two or three miners in their garage to 10 to 20 miners. And that'll plug into your conventional at home residential power.
That's kind of something I wanted to ask about. Like for people who are new to mining or maybe have thought about getting into it, but they're not really sure where to start. I mean, they might be thinking, maybe they're just going to convert a spare room in their home. What are some good tips, places to start? And at what point does someone upgrade from their at home in their garage to perhaps, one of your micropods?
Yeah, so, just do it. Just get a miner. Everybody's always like, hey, I've missed it. Have I missed the wave? And am I too late to get in? Especially in times like this right now where, what I like to think is we're coming out of a bear market. I was ringing the bell at 16, 19 grand saying, US dollars, go buy your equipment now. You're not going to see equipment this cheap. And buying equipment is just like buying Bitcoin. You're not buying it on the rush up. Like, you want to be buying it on the way down, although it's counterintuitive to do that. You just have to decide whether, hey, look, do you want to, get the better dollar cost average buying the mining equipment and buying it at the right time and doing your infrastructure at the right time, or just buy Bitcoin? It's unfortunate that Bitcoin, it's fortunate and unfortunate that it's become so industrialized and commercialized, it is harder for the smaller miners to play. You used to be able to go get lucky, buy an S9 at the right time, throw 10 of them in the basement and make a decent buck off of it. But now you not only have to have cost-effective equipment, you have to have cost-effective electricity. Unfortunately, here in Ontario, that's really difficult at 11, 12 cent power. Generally speaking, we recommend guys to be at least 7 to 9 cent. Industrial players are in the 4 cent range, if not lower than that. Timing those two things, both the cost of your equipment, cost of energy, and then also the cost of your build out, that's the side that we try to help with, because you can easily go and try to do 30 miners and somebody could charge you 40 grand, 50 grand to do that whole hookup. We sell that nanopod for $15,000, drop it, turnkey, you're ready to go, which is for the guys that have experimented, they've done their 2, 3, 10 miners in their basement, and they want to go to that next level.
You had mentioned kind of the timing to buy it. I was curious of how that impacts your business in terms of whether we're in a bull market or a bear market. I mean, right now it's the depths of a crypto winter, like you described, hopefully coming into the bull market. But does that impact your business from a sales perspective quite a bit?
It does. I don't believe in changing our pricing based on Bitcoin being high or low. Our price is our price. We always have orders. We knock on wood. Since day one, we've always had a backlog. And it's a less of a backlog right now, but it usually indicates, like in a full-blown bull market, our backlog's huge. If you talk to me 18 months ago, our backlog was like 9 months. Now it's about a month. So we're always busy, and yeah, definitely in a bull market, it's a lot busier, but we're always relatively consistent.
What are you seeing trending in terms of, you know, what blockchains people are mining these days? Is Bitcoin still, you know, the major player, or what are the other blockchains that people are, you know, setting up their rigs for and mining?
I mean, for most of our clients on an industrial scale, it's Bitcoin. Bitcoin and Bitcoin. You'll get some little sometimes like hedge to some of the fork Bitcoin, the other shots of 56 coins. Not common. There are still some guys that are like diehard Litecoin guys, and it's still working for them. But the larger scale guys are Bitcoin. Now, when you go to our Nanopod, it's everything and anything. You'll get guys that are playing the altcoin game, and that's where, like, if you want to play that gamble rather than just buying the altcoins direct, sometimes you can get really lucky with altcoin miners. I know guys that have bought altcoin miners, and it very much is a gamble, a huge gamble. But then they get it, and they bought this miner for $1,000, and they're making $50 a day off that miner, and they ROI within 20 days, and then the rest is just gravy. But it's a big gamble. You might get that altcoin miner, and by the time you get that miner, that altcoin has gone to the floor, or a bunch of other people got their miners, and the difficulty went through the roof.
I would imagine environmental concerns is something that, you know, it's maybe just a buzzword a little bit in terms of what people use when they talk about mining and that kind of thing. What's your perspective for people who maybe have pushback on, you know, Bitcoin mining's not good for the environment?
I'm smiling because I love this topic. I really think that, like, and I'm giving a speech on this later on, that is like a really big thing we need to work on educating the market on. Our technology, not just ours, but many other data centers, actually benefit the electrical grid. So we do smart curtailment. So, like, you've got your curve electricity consumption. This little bit here at the top of the bubble makes up for like 90% of our cost of electricity. The rest of the time, we have all this idle capacity. Most industrial Bitcoin miners, they shut off during that period. So what we're doing is we're taking all the underutilized assets, so the baseline hydroelectric and nuclear and other power sources that can only be used typically as baseline, and now creating, you filling the rest of that gap, consuming that, which drives down the cost of when you need that power for peak, we're turning off. And it's like creating a reverse peaker plant. Instead of turning on a natural gas power plant, you just turn off the Bitcoin miners. Now you don't need to burn those fossil fuels. You can use baseline solar, wind, hydroelectric, and other renewable sources to offset that. And like, grids are not just giving miners like a discount because they're not consuming power, but they're actually paying miners to do that. You know, Riot Blockchain made more money off curtailing and subsidies in one quarter. Can't remember which quarter it was. It's not all the time. Then they made mining Bitcoin in that same quarter.
So do you think this misconception or this, you know, headlines that the media and other people like to use that it's so bad for the environment, that's gonna sink in, that maybe that's not the case anymore, if it ever really was?
I think it's gonna be a while. I think there's gonna be a lot of people telling that story, and because for the longest time it wasn't the case and people weren't doing that, and it was exactly what they're saying. It was just baseline miners driving, because if you don't turn off, you are adding to the problem. But I mean, you know, Texas had, what was it, I think last week or the week before, 50 straight sessions. So like their power bill is every 15 minutes. So they had 50 straight sessions where power was $5,000 a megawatt hour, which is like, I don't know, $50 a kilowatt hour or something like that, or $5 a kilowatt hour. It's an insane amount of money. Every Bitcoin miner in the state was off during that time. Nobody stayed running during that time. And that was helping to offset that. You know, if you've got a 200 megawatt Bitcoin farm that goes off, that's the same as turning on a 200 megawatt natural gas power plant, except for turning off Bitcoin farm has zero emissions, right? It's just a matter of trying to educate people, and it's gonna take a long time to do it. I mean, we're trying to do it. I've been fortunate enough to be in a lot of press lately talking about that topic, and we just need to help educate more people on that.
Scott, we like to end every episode of Show Me the Crypto with the same three questions we ask every guest. So we're gonna get to that in a second. But before we do, quick question for you is, what do you think, speaking of the next bull run, will be the trend that defines it? Like, is there something, if we think about the previous bull run, maybe NFTs was a big story, or DeFi, what do you think coming in the future will be the big story?
I mean, I think the next bull run is going to be tied really close to the halving. Mm. Like, that's usually a kickstart to it, whether that's the story around it. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not as tied in with as much of the trends of the other stuff, the NFTs and the DeFis, and nothing wrong with them, just not as tied in.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be the narrative around it and what the timing is going to be like around that happening, how much of a lag. There usually is some sort of a lag that comes along with it. Mm. And I mean, hopefully we maintain that trend like we have in through the previous happenings.
So as I mentioned, three questions that we end every interview. It's a segment we call You Had Me at Crypto. Ulf's going to ask you those.
Okay.
All right. So the first question, who's your favorite person to follow in the Web3 crypto space?
Probably Pomp, because he's just funny.
Nice. Love it. Second question.
He's knowledgeable too. It's not just...
Good
he's
information.
He's not just funny.
And funny. Sorry. Yeah. Second question, what will the price of Bitcoin be 10 years from now?
10 years from now?
We're going to hold you to it, too.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to picture out a graph. I never look at... In Bitcoin, in mining, I don't ever look at 10-year increments. It's
right?
Like,
nobody really does. So.
I don't know. 800-900 gram.
Love it.
10 years out, I mean... Fall trend curve, that's not a real unrealistic number whatsoever.
No,
probably
I don't think
conservative.
So. All right, and the third and final question, what is the most underrated project in the crypto space?
I mean, okay, so this is one that they're using our product on, but I think it's very, very cool. And I just, this is the first one that came to mind. It's a project called Gridless. So they go and they actually put our pods, they were using other data centers as well, in Africa, where they're creating these microgrids, micro wind and solar projects to provide power where they don't have grid tie. But when you have energy being generated, you need to consume it. Like you can't, unless you have battery storage, but battery storage is cost prohibitive. So what they're doing is in order to provide stable power to these communities, they'll have a Bitcoin farm that can rapidly curtail like we talked about earlier. So as soon as the community needs lights, the Bitcoin farm incrementally turns off and it self-balances and it actually helps to manage those microelectrical grids using Bitcoin mining to do that.
That's super.
Shout out to Gridless.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Well, Scott, this has been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining Ulf and I on this episode of Show Me the Crypto.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Show Me the Crypto. Please make sure to subscribe as well as rate and review this podcast.